Chapter 18. The Bear Attack. Second day, 9:30 p.m. camp. What's that? I thought, as I bolted into a straight back sitting position. A clear, for sure snapping of a branch. Maybe a deer. It's time for deer to start feeding. I held my breath, listening for another sound. I didn't have long to wait. My worst fear appeared out of the trees. It was a full-grown, massive grizzly. Wow! Let Gale sleep. Maybe it will move on, I thought. The bear sniffed around the fire. The bear was below the back pack. It must have detected a scent coming from the pack. It stood up on its hind legs and reached, but the food was about 5 feet beyond its reach. The bear circled the fire with nose to the ground. It seemed to be following another scent. It turned in the direction of the platform. This is not good, I thought. The animal appeared to be following our scent. Go, get out of here, I thought to myself. The bear was on all fours, and he was using his large, bulging nose the way a trained dog would search for a particular smell. It took about 30 seconds for the bear to travel the 40 feet to the tree trunk below me. The beast reared up and came to its full height. I estimated it to be 8 or 9 feet tall. My organs were responding to the adrenaline that was spreading to every muscle cell in my body. The overriding question was, will it give up and wander away? My thoughts were, stay calm, don't move. The bear registered a scent that would soon culminate into an encounter that neither man nor beast could have predicted. I figured I could scare the bear away with a strong, loud yell, but I didn't want to yell and alarm Gale. The bear did not follow Smokey's rule of bear etiquette. The beast's massive nostrils were pulsating to help locate the source of the faint scent. The small red eyes locked onto me looking down at him. The bear let out a snort, which was probably the equivalent of gotcha in bear talk. The bear started smacking his jaws and let out a growl. It was clear the bear had made his choice for dinner. Time to see if yelling will scare him off, I thought. Get out of here! 3 things happened almost simultaneously. I yelled, Gale jumped, sat up and screamed, and the bear let out a defiant roar. My first thought was, the bear is not leaving, and it's now time for action. I swung to get the bow and arrows and yelled, climb up the tree now! Gale didn't hesitate. She headed up the tree like a trained Navy SEAL. The frightening event reminded Gale of the dog attack when she was a 7-year-old child. 3 big neighborhood dogs ran up to her and knocked her down. She was in her front yard, and she screamed as the dogs approached her. Her big brother scared the dogs away before they could inflict major damage. The trauma of that moment stayed in her memory, and now, once again, a similar incident was happening. The sight of the huge teeth and the thunderous growl sent an electrifying shock throughout her entire body, from a sound sleep to a trauma drama. Flight was the message she received, and with the adrenaline boost, going up the tree was no problem. The light of the evening shadows was plenty clear for finding the hand and footholds for getting up higher into the tree. She gripped the branches with white knuckles and a red flushed face. Her fear was not reduced by climbing higher. The bear was not going away. Drastic action was the only way to try and discourage the aggressive attack. Living to see another sunrise depended on my hunting skill with a bow and arrow. The bear, standing at full length, circled the tree we used to climb up onto the platform. It was methodically planning the best way to get to us. The massive claws were only about 8 feet away from the platform. The bear went under the platform. I couldn't get a shot. The bear acted like it was going to attempt to climb one of the trees. I could hear a crunching sound. The bear was chewing limbs so it could wrap its massive body around the tree trunk. No fear. This animal acts like it's been eating people all its life, I thought, as I decided to grab the sharp spear to see if I could slow down the aggressive attack. Try to take out one of the eyes, I thought. The bear slapped at the spear and would not allow the stick to come near its face. Gail was as high as she could go in the tree. She could only pray at this point. I got on my belly trying to distract and discourage the animal. The beast was not backing away. It appeared to be coming down to who had the best weapons. I couldn't outmuscle the bear. I had to use my wits. What could I do? The spear, at best, was only a small distraction. I need a clear shot. Maybe if I throw something, it will pursue and give me a shot. This pole is, at best, just a standoff. Thank God it can't climb a tree like a black bear, I thought. It all felt so unreal. The standoff, I felt, was only temporary. The bear didn't act a bit afraid of my puny weapon. I felt a calmness, even though a ferocious killer was only 8 feet away. I knew the animal was capable of pulling my body apart, like plucking zucchini off the vine. It seemed only a matter of time before the bear chewed a clear path up to the platform. The powerful jaw teeth chewed away a limb at about every 30 seconds. This nonsense has got to stop. Maybe if I take off my shirt and throw it out towards the fire. Got to give it a try, I thought. I took off my shirt and yelled, "Go get it!" as I threw the shirt down and towards the fire. The bear took the bait. I quickly grabbed the bow and arrow. The bear charged over and grabbed the shirt with his teeth and proceeded to shake his head back and forth. The shot was there, as the animal's back was exposed. I drew the arrow and launched a shot that penetrated the right rear portion of the dark, red, twisted, hairy beast. 3/4 of the shaft penetrated into the animal's body. This one shot alone would eventually cause the animal to bleed to death. When was the question? The bear spun around trying to find what had inflicted the pain in his back. The beast glanced up at the platform, as if to see if his prey was still there, and then it lumbered back over and resumed the task of chewing away at the limbs. I thought, now we're back with the same problem. It worked once, maybe it'll work again. I emptied my pockets and took my pants off and threw them down to the ground. The bear didn't go for it this time. I took a deep breath and pondered what to do next, I thought. I can't shoot because the platform is in the way. I've got to get some more shots, so what can I do? I looked at the small 6 feet long cross pieces of the platform and the rope I used to bind the pieces together. I thought, if I cut the rope, I can spread a few of those poles and maybe get a good shot straight down. The first pole came away quickly, as did the other 4 or 5 poles. This might work, I thought, as I began to create an opening to launch a few more shots. The massive skull would probably deflect the broad head arrow, so I aimed for a spot that would be considered the clavicle area on a human being. Maybe I could take out a lung, hopefully. The arrow penetrated into the fur and disappeared. The animal hesitated and then went back to chewing only at a much slower pace. I quickly strung another arrow and aimed for the opposite shoulder. The arrow likewise penetrated and disappeared into the huge body cavity. The third shot sent the bear into a frenzy of confusion. It went to all fours and remained motionless. I quickly strung a fourth arrow and aimed at the base of the skull. This arrow also penetrated the hide and disappeared from sight. How much is it going to take to kill this thing, I thought, as the bear lumbered towards the fire. Time stood still, it seemed, as I watched the bear slowly retreating for the first time since the battle began. Keep going, I thought, as the bear slowly disappeared into the dark shadows of the forest. A few seconds went by, after the bear left, when I glanced up at Gail clinging to the tree limbs. The silence was a reminder to breathe again, as I looked up and said, "Come on down." Gail's muscles trembled and felt extremely weak. The gray daylight was going fast. I suspected Gail's nerves were extremely frayed. We both sat down, and I held Gail in my arms and stroked her hair. Her arms were cold and trembling. Tears started to roll down her cheeks. She inhaled deeply and expanded her chest. "I didn't bargain for this," said Gail, as she pressed her cheek against my shoulder. Little did I realize the trauma that was now embedded in Gail's subconscious mind. Crawl into the bag. I'll stay awake and keep watch, I said. Sitting next to Gale, I felt a weakness in my joints. The situation reminded me of the time a hurricane force storm prevented my wife from flying to the hospital when she went into labor. The only way to get to the hospital was by flying in a small plane. I delivered my own son in our small fishing cabin. The delivery went fine, and the village nurse arrived in time to clean up and cut our son's umbilical cord. I handled the stress okay until I stepped out the front door into the fresh air. My whole body felt weak. I massaged Gail's neck and shoulder muscles. She was extremely tense. We both could have benefited by a couple of shots of brandy. We would both be dead now if we had been on the ground, I thought, as I retied the platform boards. Uh-oh, the rain started falling. I grabbed the tarp and flapped it over the log above the platform. The bear will probably be dead before sun comes up. The worst is behind us. We're safe up here. Gail took a deep breath and seemed to have gotten her second wind. You going to stay awake? Gail asked. Yes. Go ahead and try to get some sleep. Are you okay? Asked Gail. I'm fine. I don't think I'll be able to get any sleep, said Gail, as she crawled into her bag. After a few minutes, I could hear Gail's heavy breathing. It's going to be a long night, I thought. Darkness had finally come, and all I could hear was the light patter of raindrops on the tarp. Let's see if this frog light works, I thought. The flashlight was fully charged. There was smoke coming up from the campfire and no four-legged critters. Deja vu, I thought. I was reminded of the time when I was about 16 years old. Dad and I and two uncles were on our annual opening weekend deer hunting trip. I took my sleeping bag, rifle, and flashlight and walked about a half mile from the campground. The plan was to sleep on the ground and wake up 30 minutes before daylight and catch a deer fleeing the first wave of hunters fanning out into the woods. It was a good plan, with one exception. I didn't anticipate the critters that surrounded me all night. My flashlight revealed little green eyes glowing in the dark shadows of the pine and fir trees. I was taught that the California Sierra Nevada mountain animals might be a nuisance, but not a threat. My instincts were telling me something different. My instincts told me this was a dumb idea. The sleeping bag was not deep enough. I kept telling myself that the forest animals were more afraid of me than I was of them. It was a long night. The rain, hitting the plastic tarp, drowned out any chance of hearing the night sounds. Fatigue eventually overtook me, and I nodded off into a deep sleep. The need to urinate during the night was the only thing that interrupted a good sound sleep. A new day greeted us with a gray cloud layer, only 500 feet above the treetops. With the new day also came a fresh new wave of optimism, being rescued.